I'm curious if you had anything to say to a new game creator, if you'd have any words of wisdom for them, either in the actual building of the game or just trying to get the word out about their game.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it depends on what your goals are as a game creator. If your goal is...
Welcome to the Hey Good Game podcast, where we chat with the creators of your favorite games that you secretly play in the cracks of your day. So we just got done interviewing Grant Warman of Polygonal. And Aaron, what were your takeaways from that?
Well, with Grant, we had a great discussion about Polygonal and Quadrigonal and certainly the topic of collaboration with other game creators and how that can be a good launching point and also a way to give back to the community. Was also intrigued by just the world of competitive Super Smash Brothers play and kind of the segmentation of people sticking to a particular device. Thought was interesting. So how about you, Nate? What'd you take away?
Yeah, well, I'm a fan of these creators who have their first game just blow up. It's so wild. And as we work our way up towards interviewing Josh Wardle at some point, it's quite cool to see that game continue to have a trickle-down effect of inspiration for many of these people. And I don't think that that's necessarily a coincidence. So really excited about this interview. We'll get right to the pod. I'm Nate Kadlec, and I'm here with my co-host, Aaron Cardell. And today, we are excited to speak with Grant Warman, the creator of Polygonal, the word game with shape-based clues. Grant is a software engineer who has worked for companies like Verily and Google. And after creating Polygonal, he's also made an offshoot game based on it called Quadrigonal. Did I get that right?
That is one of the alternate pronunciations. I call it Quadrigonal, but you're not the first to call it Quadrigonal.
That's amazing. Well, that is a new word game challenge that has 4x4 word grids with shape-based clues as well. Polygonal is a daily word game that works like Wordle, but is a more accessible and challenging game with polygon clues. So each shape hint contains a specific letter, and you get several attempts to uncover the correct answer. Grant, we're thrilled to be here. We usually like to kick these off with a question about what is your favorite game to play?
That is a great question. And it's not a word game, unfortunately. But I play competitive Super Smash Brothers Melee, the old game for GameCube. That's my main gaming passion these days. And actually, the idea for Polygonal was spawned in a Discord group for that game.
Interesting. I have so many follow-up questions only because tangentially, my kids play Super Smash Brothers on the Switch. I used to play Mario Kart a lot, but only on the Nintendo 64. So I'm curious, you play competitively on GameCube. Why on GameCube? I can imagine from my own experience, but what's up with that?
Yeah, so this is the second Smash game that they created, and it has unique game mechanics that were sort of removed in later versions. And it has this really fanatical grassroots community that just loves the game. And because the game hasn't changed since its release, I think it's been 22 years or so, it has developed this really remarkable meta that is evolving over time, where characters that were considered very bad when the game was released, you're seeing people use those at the highest level. It's almost like chess in the sense that there are truths about the game that are discovered and people are ridiculously good at it now. So it's really fun.
So what does that mean to be a competitive player? Like, do you enter tournaments pretty regularly? What's that like?
Yeah. So the competitive nature of it is attending tournaments in person. There is an online ranked format that some people have built on the side as a passion project, but the main thing is traveling and attending tournaments. So here in Denver, there's a tournament basically every day of the week in one of the cities nearby. So there's one in Denver, there's one in Fort Collins, there's one occasionally in the Springs, there's one in Boulder, there's events all over the place. And then there are also these larger events that you'll go and travel to that have like 1,000 to 2,000 attendees. And those are also a really fun experience because you compete and then get them knocked out. You just go watch the pros. And yeah, it's like a sporting event. It's really exciting to watch your favorite player compete.
So is it competitively like you playing for money? Is it purely for fun?
Yeah, so most tournaments do have a prize pool. Normally, I have made a very tiny amount of money. It is certainly not, even for the very best players, it's not very financially lucrative. But yeah, so when you enter, you normally pay some entrance fee that goes into a pot. And then depending on the size of the tournament, the top three players or maybe the top eight will get a payout. So yeah, that's how the payment bit works.
Like poker, it's a game of skill and you got to buy in.
Exactly.
Love it.
Are you ranked?
Yeah, so I was close to being in the top 10 in Colorado, and then I started working on some other projects. But no, I'm not officially ranked. I've taken some games off some ranked players, though. So
that is wild. You had mentioned chess a little bit. I'm curious, what are the overlapping kind of mechanics between that and Super Smash Brothers? Like you had mentioned there's some kind of connection there. And I love chess myself, but I'm curious like what that is.
Yeah, good question. So chess is my other big passion, I should have mentioned. And I think they are related if you play faster formats of chess, like bullet chess or blitz on a faster time control. So in chess, you'll have a tactic, right? A series of moves where someone will gain an advantage. And that exists also in Smash, where if you are aware of what's going on and you hit the right opening, there's a forced sequence of moves where you can respond to everything your opponent does and get a large advantage. And that aspect is similar. The other thing is people discover like new techniques. So in chess, so what happens in chess is there are these high level principles that people try to follow. And then the best players learn when you can break those principles. And the same thing applies in Smash, where there's quote unquote like good options in certain positions. And the very best players know when to mix in what would typically be a bad option, but it catches their opponent off guard and then they gain some large advantage. So yeah, there are definitely some similarities and a lot of differences. But the cool thing is just there are truths about the game to be discovered, and they're still discovering things in chess and in Smash.
Love it. So is everybody that does this competitively, is it pretty much focused on GameCube, or are there different segments that focus in on playing on different devices?
Yeah, so Wii and GameCube are both used for Super Smash Brothers Melee, which is the version of the game that I play. Like if there's a smaller cult following that does the 64 version only, and then I think the bulk of the players play the newest game, Ultimate, which is on Switch. And those communities, there is some overlap, but they're pretty distinct. They have their own diehard followers and their own like personalities within the scene and everything. So yeah, their own little communities.
Love that. All right, everyone, quick break. Attention game creators. Have you ever thought about selling your game? At Hey Good Game, we're looking to acquire and steward some of the most popular and beloved games on the internet. Even if you're just curious, we offer a fast process to getting you an offer. Just provide some basic analytics and revenue details, and we'll quickly get back to you. If you move forward with us, we usually close within 14 days. Visit hey.gg and see how we can take your game to the next level together. And now, back to the show.
So I play a lot of chess.com. Where are you, and is that something you stick your nose up to? Someone who takes it seriously.
I mostly play on Lee Chess. I play on chess.com occasionally.
Yeah.
But yeah, I started playing in my early 20s, and chess is super fun, an easy place to burn time to improve. You could spend all your time just practicing puzzles and tactics and improve a lot. But I reached a point where I'm good enough to watch and appreciate Grandmaster play. I think that is a good level, and I don't have any serious aspirations of trying to get a title or anything. It seems like an enormous amount of work.
I currently do not have chess on my phone for that exact reason of playing too much. So
yeah, it's so addicting.
Delete it every few months. So kind of understand a little bit about how games came to play a big part in your life. Like, do you have any memories from your childhood that have you been playing forever? Or I'm kind of curious, like, where that comes from.
Yeah, it's a good question. I have always been very competitive, and I think that is the central theme in my life with games, that I hated losing and I loved competing. I played games like Smash when I was younger, just for fun, but just competing against our friends. And then as I've grown older, I have really enjoyed this process of improvement, of trying to identify the areas of weakness or your strengths and doubling down on your strengths. And just the art of improvement in general is something that is really interesting to me. And games are kind of a vehicle for that.
And was Polygonal your first game, or have you been developing games for a long time?
Polygonal is the first game I've made.
Wow.
And I've definitely been playing games for a while. I was playing Wordle during its peak, and I made Polygonal just as a fun little side project with no intention of it becoming something popular. And it kind of grew legs and became a thing.
Where'd you come up with the idea for the shape-based clue system?
Yeah, so this all started in the Smash Brothers Discord group in Colorado. Someone had attended a tournament and they posted this riddle. Someone had invented this little cryptographic puzzle, and it was this picture with a series of different shapes, and there was just one answer. So those shapes, each shape corresponded to a letter, just like how it works in Polygonal. And there was one distinct word that fit that pattern. And if I remember correctly, it was like the word cataract or something. And so someone posted this puzzle and people were trying to solve it. And for a group of video game nerds, I was surprised by how excited everyone was to solve this word puzzle. So being the programmer I am, I wrote a script that solved it, and I ended up spoiling the solution for some people, and I felt kind of bad. And at the time, I had just quit my job at Verily, so I had a lot of free time on my hands. So I just started building some tools to generate these sorts of puzzles. And the reception from this community on those puzzles was really tremendous. I was really surprised by how many people were engaged and interested in solving these. And then I was thinking, I should try to figure out how to transform this into something that people can play regularly. And that was what ultimately led me to building Polygonal.
Nate and I were kind of talking ahead of time, and it's a tough puzzle to get into at first, especially I like a lot of word games, but I also don't think my vocabulary is that great. For repeat players, what are you seeing in terms of how many guesses do they typically take to get to the answer?
Yeah, it's a good question. I would say the average player gets it in 3 to 4 guesses. It behaves very differently than Wordle, even though it's somewhat of a small twist. The really advanced players will play on what's called Hexpert mode, which will only allow guesses that conform to the pattern. So if you see a shape repeating, your guess has to fit that pattern. It is far more difficult to play in that mode. I basically never play in that mode. It's really, really hard. The upside of that is there may be only 40 different words in the whole dictionary that fit the pattern. Or on some days, it's just like 2 or 3. So it might take you 30 minutes of thinking to arrive at the answer, but the likelihood of getting it in a few number of guesses goes up a lot. And then we also have another set of players who play it exactly like Wordle. They just think of a 7 or 8 letter word, depending on the day, and get all the information they can. They don't mind how many attempts it takes. And then, you know, they just try to reason through with the shapes and then traditional reasoning what the solution might be.
That was my first few attempts.
Yeah.
Unsuccessful.
That's what I would expect for most people. I think the cool thing is seeing the different solving strategies. So a lot of folks, when they become more experienced with the puzzles, they start solving before even guessing anything. They look at the pattern of the shapes. They plug in some like suffixes or prefixes. and see what words could possibly fit that pattern. And they use that to have a really educated first guess, and then they'll normally get it in like two or three.
I do like the mechanic of being able to place the letters wherever you want, because without that, that would be...
It would be brutal.
Yeah, yeah. It would be absolutely brutal.
I think the first few social media folks I saw try to tackle the puzzle, they would use like X's as fillers.
Mm-hmm.
And I very quickly was like, this is not going to scale. People do not want to play this if they have to do that every single time. So
I'm curious, how has the game changed? So that's like one piece of feedback that you saw. You know, how many iterations or versions have you built from the original?
Ooh, that's a great question. I'm trying to think of major changes I've made. So as far as the actual game mechanics, there haven't been super large changes. I think the cursor changes, what you're describing, being able to select an individual tile and fill it in, we've had a couple iterations of that. So there's also a version where you can have it automatically fill in the matching shape. And then the Hexpert mode was something that we added after the fact. And I think most of our diehard players use that almost exclusively. They only want to solve it in that mode. The only other pretty large change we added was a achievements system. So there's some pretty lofty achievements that people can earn for, you know, solving the game 500 times or 1,000 times or something, and also solving on difficulty mode. So there's a whole host of achievements that people can try to earn. And that's a feature that's been pretty well received.
Before we hopped on, you were kind of talking about just you've got a good collaborative community working with other game creators. And we saw that you had collaborated with Thirdle maybe back in 2023. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so these collaborations have been really helpful for growing our game. And as a result, I felt the need to kind of give back to some other newer games in the community. So I forget when Thirdle was created, but they launched after us. And the idea of just having a crossover puzzle is great for both communities. It introduces a new game to a population that maybe has never heard about it. There's normally some like theme that is spanning both of the games. So there's a fun aspect in that. We got the idea of doing this from Squirtle. I don't know if you're familiar with them. So Squirtle and Waffle did a really big crossover a long time ago, and the creator of Squirtle attributes a huge amount of their success to that initial crossover. And similarly for us, we did a crossover with Squirtle, and we gained, I forget the exact number, maybe like 7,000 to 8,000 additional daily users from that one crossover. And the Thirdle crossover was the reverse situation, where they had a smaller population of players and we were able to help them grow their population. So
that's great. Love to see that when people give back, and especially after you got some benefit in a similar arrangement yourself. So that's cool. Looks like you've got ads on the site. Is that kind of your primary path on monetizing?
Yeah. So the first 9 months of Polygon, we had no ads, and we reached a point where with the amount of traffic we were getting and some of the new features I was interested in building, we needed some kind of income stream. So I built a premium offering for no ads. Then most of our users are playing the free version, which does have the ads. And yeah, it's been pretty remarkable. It's a lot more profitable than I ever would have imagined when building this game as just a for fun project.
You had mentioned earlier that you left Fairly a while back. Is this kind of your primary income generator now?
I would say yes. I am working on a new project now that's still in the game space. It's coincidentally related to my Super Smash Brothers passion. But yeah, this is my primary form of income. And then I was working at Google and Verily. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but it's under the Alphabet companies. So it was originally one of these other Google bets that spun off into its own company. So yeah, I was fortunate enough to save a decent amount and work on fun side projects like Polygonal. So
it's awesome.
And not live in the Bay. right? So
yes,
save a little cash.
A little bit more affordable.
Yeah. Although real estate in Colorado these days.
No, you're right.
It's, yeah, not very fun.
No. So I was doing a little searching and I found a number of TikTok videos and other things. Has content ever been a strategy for you in terms of getting, you know, this out to new users, whether it's SEO or video or anything else? I'm curious if you've dabbled there.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think when I first created the game, I emailed some people who had blog posts about Wordle games, and I emailed some creators on YouTube and TikTok. If I remember correctly, I think it was in the first week, one of the TikTok creators made a post. It was the first post ever about our game, and it had 300,000 views or something. And that, the TikTok growth, all organic. I mean, after my first email, I did basically no additional outreach, and the game became really popular among a set of TikTokers who solve Wordle games every day. Like, that's their whole platform, is they're just really skilled at word games. They play them every day. They do all the New York Times puzzles, and then they'll play some of the offshoots. And that was all organic. I mean, there was nothing that I did other than just tell people that the game existed. And we have tried some ad spends, which was very unsuccessful. So I would say the overarching trend was people liked to discover a new game when they see someone play it. And then I think their own little communities on TikTok. So when you have a creator who's playing the game every couple of weeks, that creates a following of other people who want to participate too. So they want to play the same game and compare how they did versus how the creator did. And yeah, that's been a huge driving factor behind our growth as a game. Also, decline as a game. Both facets are connected to the sort of TikTok social sphere.
I'm curious if you had anything to say to a new game creator, if you'd have any words of wisdom for them, either in the actual building of the game or just trying to get the word out about their game.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it depends on what your goals are as a game creator. If your goal is, I want to create a really popular game, and you don't care about being artistic and creative, I think taking an idea that works well and putting a creative twist on it is a really good way to be successful. And part of that, it's similar to doing a startup company, where if you're creating a whole new market that has never existed before, the upside is enormous. But most people don't have the right ingredients to succeed when they create something completely novel. So there's a very small set of people that figure out those exact correct elements. And that's the benefit of starting from something that is successful and then putting a twist on it, is hopefully the core mechanics, the core game design components that made this inspiration successful will also benefit your game. And I've seen a number of games that have succeeded with that model. So have you heard of Contexto?
Yes.
It's a game where you're trying to guess a word, and with each guess, it tells you how similar your guess is to the target word. So Semantle is a game that first came up with that idea, and then Contexto is almost identical. In fact, I don't know if there is a twist, but they did create a more polished experience, and that exploded on TikTok. That was one of the games, maybe 6 months after I had launched Polygonal, this Contexto game came out. Then suddenly there are people playing this everywhere. And it's interesting that they didn't really invent something totally new. They just took this existing Semantle game, did their own little spin on it, tried to execute it really well, and they were really successful as a result.
So one of the things that I don't think we've really dove into with any game creators so far is where do you think the line is on good inspiration versus, oh, it kind of feels like you stole it.
Yeah.
And like, I know you've had people knock off Polygonal. A lot of people we've talked to have had knockoffs of their games, and it's super frustrating. But there are these cases where 2048, you kind of see it both ways. If you're familiar with 2048, it was sort of derived from some of the mechanics of another game, but it was definitely different. But then there's a million and one clones of 2048. And it sort of seems intuitive to me that 2048 as a concept was cool, but all these knockoffs weren't. But do you have any other thoughts on where is that line acceptable?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Okie dokie. A quick break. Are you a fan of games that challenge your mind and sharpen your skills? Dive into the world of Hey Good Game, where brainy fun meets creativity. Like Sudoku, but need a bigger challenge? Check out Kokoro Conquest. It's a fun test of logic and math skills. Then get ready for Crosswordle. It's a matchup of crossword and Wordle, a new take on word puzzles that will keep you guessing and engaged. You'll find those games and others at hey.gg. And now back to the show.
I think if the foundation of the game mechanics is identical and the way someone plays the game is the same, then it's not a sincere attempt at generating a spin-off type of game. I think you can have a remarkably small twist and the way the game is played and the strategy can be completely different. That's how I've felt with Polygonal, where the gameplay aspect is very similar to Wordle, right? There's still a hidden clue. When you make a guess, it gives you some information. But the way you play the game and the way you problem solve around solving the game is completely different. And that is this kind of emergent property that I didn't design necessarily, but just the nature of this small twist of giving an additional piece of information at the start just completely changes the way your thought process works when you're trying to solve a puzzle. And to me, that is the important part in making something distinct. If I just made Wordle that was 6 to 8 letters long, to me, that's just Wordle, right? It's not a novel twist. It's not changing the way you play the game fundamentally, other than it just being longer words. So yeah, I think the key differentiator, it needs to have a different feeling when you're playing the game. And for those 2048 clones, it's the same game, right? There's no difference. There's nothing novel. You don't change the way you play. So those would definitely fall in the category of being a ripoff.
And at least a different name, right? Come on.
Yeah, at least, yeah.
You posted, I think in August last year, that you had 1.1 million users from 147 different countries. I'm guessing that was a month of traffic, or?
I don't think so. That might have been our cumulative traffic.
Okay.
At our peak, we are around 20,000 daily users.
Okay. Yeah, I guess like when you view Polygonal right now, do you feel like there's room for growth? Are you actively trying to grow it, or are you, I know you're coming out with new games and we can talk a little bit about that, but do you feel like, is there room for growth for Polygonal?
That's a good question. I think there are a lot of people who don't know about Polygonal who would really enjoy playing it, and without me changing anything about the nature of the game itself. I also think that this is a game that is not going to reach like waffle levels of popularity. There is a smaller subset of like word game fanatics who really love the challenge of longer words and this like problem solving approach. But I think it's a smaller population of users. So I don't foresee us growing like 10x or anything over the next few years, but I think we'll be pretty stable and continue to have a really invested fan base. I am not currently planning on putting a lot of more development time into Polygonal. And yeah, I mean, right now, when I quit my job at Verily, my original intent was to build a larger business. And I have some experience with startups in the past. So that was my original intent. And then this Polygonal thing came out of nowhere, completely unintended. Learned a whole bunch in the process of building the game, iterating on the game, interacting with creators, building that sort of network. So that's all been a great learning experience. But I reached a point where the next goal is to build a larger business that, you know, won't be a single game, but will be something that's solving problems for a wider set of people.
Got it. Is there anything else you want to say about that? Are you thinking like kind of like a studio or a suite of games, or is this something separate from what you're currently working on?
Yeah. So what I'm working on now is disconnected from the word game or puzzle space. It's not building a game. It's building a platform for managing and running tournaments. So this is a big pain point for all my Smash brethren. But yeah, it's disconnected.
Well, I don't know if you'd consider that part of addressing the needs of e-gaming, but that is a growing segment right now. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Grant, after Polygonal came Quadrigonal. But tell us more about where that concept came from and just what went into the development process on that.
I think we had this discussion about game design and what makes a game unique and stand out on its own versus being more heavily influenced by an existing game. And Polygonal was absolutely a game that was just a small twist on Wordle. So I was trying to build a game where you were just faced with this puzzle. There was no guessing mechanic, and your goal was to complete the puzzle, similar to a Sudoku. And after some iteration, I came up with this idea of a grid of words, just like Polygonal, that you had to complete so that there were valid four-letter words on rows and columns, just like a crossword. And my first iteration of this, I generated some puzzles and had some people try to play them, and it was just way, way too hard. Like, no one could solve them. But the few set of people who did solve them actually really enjoyed the mechanics of the game. So I ended up iterating on this idea a little bit and coming up with different difficulty levels. So just like with Sudoku, if you do a really easy Sudoku, most people can just solve it using very simple deduction. And if you try to solve an expert Sudoku, many of us are not even equipped to solve them. So that was kind of my goal with the difficulty levels in Quadrigonal, where the easiest puzzles, most people can solve them without too much outside help. But the expert puzzle, a very small set of people are going to be able to solve those puzzles. And the nice thing about this is the person who's a more casual word game fanatic, they can go and solve the easy puzzle and maybe push themselves and try to solve a medium puzzle. But the real expert players, they'll solve all of the puzzles, and they can solve the expert puzzle in under a minute sometimes. And they're just really skilled at doing it. So it's nice to be able to build a game that appeals to both a casual user and a more serious and skilled user. And I think we struck that balance with Quadrigonal.
How have you seen that perform in terms of crossover from Polygonal and just new user acquisition? Like, any surprises there?
Yeah, so it's definitely still a new game in the sense that it doesn't have the awareness that Polygonal has. So I think, I forget the exact number, but on TikTok, Polygonal, the hashtag, has over like 20 million, 25 million views, something like that. So there's a ton of just knowledge that Polygonal exists. And I think to date, we've had maybe 3 videos total on Quadrigonal. So it's still very much a small niche community that is playing the game. There is definitely a crossover from Polygonal. We have it promoted on the Polygonal page. But I think because it's a different mechanic, it just appeals to a slightly different set of users. And it's been interesting to see it kind of grow and receive feedback from people saying they really love how difficult it is and how challenging it is. So that's been cool to see.
So as you're getting feedback from people, how do you elicit that? Do you have an email list? Do you have a Discord? How do you listen for user feedback and get those feedback loops?
Yeah, so we have a couple different communities. We have everything from Facebook, Reddit, Twitter, and Discord. And I think our most vocal community is on Discord. And we have a feedback section on there where people can propose new features for Polygonal or just get feedback on game mechanics. And we had a number of iterations on Quadrigonal, for example, where the first iterations were just too difficult, too frustrating. And when you hear one person give a piece of feedback, sometimes it's hard to know if it's just them or it applies to a larger group. But the nice thing is that our communities are large enough that you'll, if something is really important, you will hear it more than once. You know, multiple people will share a similar sentiment. And that is normally what drives the things that I will actually incorporate. Same thing in Polygonal with the ability to select individual cells. That's a feature that very quickly we had numerous people saying, hey, this would be really helpful if I didn't have to use these fillers. And it was a very straightforward feature to add, and people were really receptive to that improvement.
They're awesome. But I think I love puzzle games, and it's just the combination of the puzzle and the words that I wish I was better at these right out of the gate.
I'm not very good at them either. So it's fun watching people solve my games really easily. There's a guy on YouTube who, well, first shout out to Ranksk. I don't know if you've heard of this creator on YouTube. He does all the Wordle games. It's R-A-N-G-S-K. He's been super helpful. I think he was one of the first YouTube creators that I sent an email to about Polygonal. He's given me tons of direct feedback through the process. He still plays Polygonal daily, but he is so good at these games. He will get the first word in and then instantly know the next word. Just, I have no idea where this is coming from, but yeah, he'll solve it super fast. And when he was getting challenged by Quadrigonal, I knew, okay, this is a little too hard right now. We need to add some hints. We need to give people more information so they can get started. But yeah, my mind is not wired to the way a lot of these people.
So I kind of assume from a difficulty perspective that are you generating these by algorithm on both sites?
Not on Polygonal. I mean, I had for Polygonal, I had a really relatively simple heuristic for getting the list of words. I filtered out words that weren't very common in the English language. And then I looked for words that had to have enough repeated characters so that the shapes would actually give you a hint. And then the only other really big change I added is in the first few months, there were a ton of words that ended in ing. So people would just consistently guess a word that ends in ing and they would be right. And then it'd give them a bunch of information. And that wasn't very interesting. So I left some words that ended in ing, but I stripped a huge number of these so that it was more diverse from day to day. Yeah, and then on Quadrigonal, that was algorithmically generated, all the puzzles. And it's very difficult to know in advance how difficult a puzzle will be. So I didn't put too much effort in that process on its own. It's more the easier puzzles, you get more information to start, and the harder puzzles, you get less information. But there's still going to be a pretty high variance in difficulty. Yeah, so some days people will say it takes them 20 minutes to solve it, and some days they'll solve it in under a minute. So it's hard to know in advance.
I'm curious, like, do you have any, if you're willing to share any like engagement time, like how much time do people spend on your site?
There is a feature I added actually to this to address the problem of people not having 8-letter words readily available. There's a little light bulb on the keyboard that will just give you words that are the right length.
Okay.
To help like jumpstart yourself. I think the average daily engagement on Polygonal is around 5 minutes. And let's see on Quadrigonal. It's about 3 minutes on Quadrigonal per session. So I don't know if people are just solving it super fast or they're solving one and then leaving. Because the original intent behind Quadrigonal was also to build something challenging so that people are engaged for a longer period of time.
That makes sense. I would have guessed a little higher too on Polygonal.
On Quadrigonal, is it possible to have multiple solutions, or does your algorithm kind of filter out that possibility?
Yeah, good question. So yes, we accept alternate solutions, and that's something that people have been pretty positive about. Originally, my intention was for them to have a unique solution, and I had a friend of mine work on generating some of these, and I think his approach was just not correct. I guess it didn't produce unique puzzles. And so I ended up just keeping the puzzles that he had generated and just accepting alternate solutions. And it's interesting. Sometimes a puzzle will have a whole bunch of different solutions, and there's a sense of achievement when you solve it. And there's an additional little hit, I guess, of endorphins when it's the correct one and not an alternate one. So
Grant, if you want people to find you online, where should they look?
I don't know if I have a really central location for an online identity, but you can find me on Twitter at blorp with 5 P's and an underscore at the end. It's very convenient. But actually, you should probably go look up Polygonal Game. That's where we post about Polygonal.
Right on.
Love it.
Well, thanks for being here, Grant.
Thanks for having me. This has been really fun.
This is great. Thanks, Grant.